Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen. And we welcome you to Love Letters Live, which, as our regular listeners know, is a presentation of personal stories and love letters that follow. Teresa and I are big believers in the power of letters to do a lot of things. We'll see. You'll see how this goes. And we bring you stories of life lived beautifully in the face of huge challenges, blessings unexpected, victories just out of the blue, and how hard people have to work at sometimes to overcome what is handed them and land butter side up, not only with their own strength, but able to help others. It's just a real tribute to human strength. So I'm going to go to our guest today, Gail Slade, who is a retired marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles and San Diego. And I'm just going to go right to you and say, would you please talk about you and what is most important to you in your life now?
That's a very broad question.
I know it is. But I'm holding this book right here, so maybe you can start off telling us about this.
Sure. I've written a book called Dana's Legacy, From Heartbreak to Healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of our child, our first child, who was born in 1954, and she had cerebral palsy mm-hmm. as a result of a birth accident, a mistake that a doctor made.
Oh, my.
And this was unfortunate. I'll just tell you briefly about that.
I think that's important because for people listening, anything we can learn is good.
Sure. Well, first of all, you have to realize that in the 50s, things were very, very different. And I was 18 years old.
Right.
My husband was 21. And we had, I was 20 when I actually had her.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems that ensued were that I was supposed to have a cesarean birth because I had had spinal surgery as a young girl at 12 years old, scoliosis, so my back was fused.
Oh.
And the doctor said, you know, you really cannot have a child normally or naturally, so always remember this. Well, 12 years old, that's a lot to remember for a little kid. Anyway, the time came when I did get pregnant, and the doctor knew this, my doctor, and he said, we have it all approved. You will have a cesarean. You cannot go through
a delivery.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, and I adored this man, he was, he had a terrible heart attack, almost died. And so he was unable to keep caring for me, obviously. And his partner stepped in to take over the situation. And he said to me, the first time I visited him, he said, you know, I think we're going to give you a test of labor.
Mm.
And I was horrified. I told my husband, and we were both so upset. Remember that in the 50s, or maybe some of you who don't know, doctors and people of what's the word I want
to authority?
Say? Authority
mm-hmm.
were gods,
mm-hmm.
and we did not cross them. I told him how upset I was. I said, I don't think that's correct. He says, no. He says, don't worry. We'll just give you a test of labor. So he did more than that, because when the time came, I went through 6 hours of hard labor.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was supposed to have a small child, and she turned out to be 8 pounds.
Mm.
And I weighed 98 pounds when this happened. So it was just a snafu. It was horrible. And she was unconscious at birth.
Mm-hmm.
They had given me gas. So I'm telling you the horror stories, but this is the way things happen.
Well, it is a horror story.
Yeah, this is the way things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just distraught. And when they told us that our daughter had cerebral palsy.
And this they knew right away?
No, they didn't do it right away.
Uh-huh.
She was in the hospital for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we came, we didn't know, it was really touch and go, and the doctors kept giving us percentages of, well, she'll, you know, 100% of these kids have this, 50% have that, and we just held on to everything that the doctors said.
Mm-hmm.
But in essence, they didn't know what was going to happen with Dana. So we brought her home, and we cared for her, and she was a problem. She was really difficult for me to take care of her.
What makes that difficult for a mother?
I'll explain. First of all, being so young, I was hardly able to take care of any child. let alone a child who had severe disabilities.
And you could see that right away.
Oh, right away. Uh-huh. And she would scream.
Oh.
She was so uncomfortable. She was very, very spastic. Her back was arched. And, you know, if you can't hug and love your child, mm-hmm. that's so painful for a parent. I could not hold her. She would not lean into me. Uh-huh. It was constantly a struggle. And she was a beautiful child. And
I can. Is this her on the cover of the book? She is a beautiful child.
Yeah, beautiful little girl. Mm-hmm. And it was breaking my heart. My husband was traveling a great deal that first year, and I was pretty much alone because he had started a new business, and I was alone at home, and I felt terribly isolated. Then, when we went to her, I think it was her six-week exam, they told us that she had cerebral palsy, probably. But that didn't mean anything. She could still survive and mm-hmm. be okay. But when they said that to me, I knew, and it was the worst moment of my life. This was really a painful, painful experience.
That's not a condition that's curable.
No, it's not curable, but there are all degrees of people. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that. I thought cerebral palsy was just a death sentence for me, but mm-hmm. there are many people with cerebral palsy who are very successful,
mm-hmm.
and it ranges from minor to very severe. And I know people who have severe cerebral palsy who are very successful in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that, you mm-hmm. know, at 20 years old. It just seemed like a death knell for me. Consequently, we went home and we tried to find doctors. And as I had said previously to some people, that there was no internet. There was no internet.
Right.
There was nothing to research because there was no resources, mm-hmm. as there are millions today,
mm-hmm.
millions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy for parents to find something. It's never easy to have that diagnosis, but they don't feel so alone.
Right.
And we were terribly isolated.
Well, not only alone, but that further entraps you in the...
Exactly. Are you okay?
Excuse me, the hands of the authority.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, and the doctors are the ones...
You can't go on your own and be...
Exactly. And, in fact, when we would take her to the doctors... This is when she was still very young. The doctors really did not pay much attention to Dawn or to me. They looked at Dana at what was wrong. It was like she was divided in parts. This part is wrong and that part is wrong. And they didn't look at what she had that was right.
Mm-hmm.
That
nope.
she was. Nobody said to us, this is such a beautiful child.
I was going to say, what was right?
Yeah.
I can see the way you're smiling.
No, she was just so beautiful and so... And I don't mean that beauty is it, but there was something almost ethereal, and
mm-hmm.
She was wonderful. But every mother likes to hear, every mother and father like
of course,
to hear
yes.
nice things about their kids, not the deficits, you know. So this was quite a problem, and I just we kept looking, and finally,
was there any help offered to you, like for help in terms of helping her grow up and be.
Well, you're sort of ahead of the game.
Sorry. Okay,
no, that's
ahead.
Okay, because I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
Finally, we discovered a physician at UCLA, a very well-known person who specialized in cerebral mm-hmm. palsy.
And how old was Dana by this time?
Dana was about a year, just about a year old.
Mm-hmm.
And this doctor, Dr. Margaret Jones, a lot of people know who she is. She was
okay.
very famous. She was a lovely old lady
mm-hmm.
who... welcomed us into her program, and this was the beginning of our life. We felt that she was going to save Dana.
Uh-huh.
She was going to fix Dana. That's what parents want to do when their kids are first born. They want to fix them.
And the reality is that instead of fixing, a child can be strengthened to maximum potential.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Not fixed. But
right.
this was, and of course now I'm talking about, you know, 54 years ago.
Yeah.
So now parents don't look at things quite like that anymore.
Right.
They're much more sophisticated. But anyway, we were in Dr. Jones's program, and I had said I was very isolated. I didn't want to take her outside. There were other parents. We live in an apartment
mm-hmm.
complex, and these parents were so happy. The mothers were happy about their children, and I just stayed home. I stayed inside, and I just despaired. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. Anyway, all these parents were still at the UCLA program, and that opened up a world for us.
You had company.
We had company. They were people going through the same thing.
Yeah.
They understood us. We understood them, and we finally felt that we were no longer going to be alone or isolated. And this was really terrific. Mm-hmm. And when I say isolated, our parents helped us. You know, we had family members, mm-hmm. but that wasn't the same thing. They didn't know any more than we did. So Dana was there for about a year and a half, and Dr. Jones, we thought she was doing great. But Dr. Jones then came to us and said, well, I really don't have good news for you.
Mm.
We don't think that Dana will live perhaps past puberty. And if she does, she will be severely disabled, severely disabled. Well, this was heartbreaking to us, and it was something we refused to accept.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's a diagnosis I can't accept. So we looked for everybody, and so she didn't stay at UCLA. And we were looking elsewhere for other doctors to give us different, and we did everything. We went to every kind of quack. We saw everything, and I have an uncle who was an orthopedic doctor, and he would go with us because...
So that's a nice warning for people, to be careful
about
getting into the hands of the wrong person.
You're so desperate. But as I say, times are different now.
Yes.
Because of the Internet and because of the connection, people are meeting other people sooner.
Yes, of
And course. I think, even though still I have to say... Parents still feel terribly isolated.
How can you not?
And, sure. And you know, there's still something about a shame or embarrassment about having a child
and
go
a
out
task
in public.
That is so hard.
Pardon me?
A task.
Oh.
That is so hard to fulfill.
That's...
So
yeah.
How long did Dana live?
Till she was 14.
Oh, really? So...
But we actually ended up placing Dana because I was becoming ill.
Mm-hmm.
And... I didn't feel like I could handle it anymore, and there was nothing out there for us.
So as she was growing up, she knew who you were?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I always told my husband, oh, of course she knows me, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to work very hard to get her to laugh and tickle.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really say that she really looked at me with those eyes. You know how a child looks at you?
Yes.
They didn't seem to focus, and so I didn't really get a lot of feedback mm-hmm. from her. And I felt like I was doing a very thankless job.
Yes.
You know,
sure.
I'm embarrassed to say that, but that's really the way it felt.
Do you have other children?
I have two. We have two other children, grown children. Yeah.
Well, this was 54 years ago, yes.
Right. We have a son, 51, and a daughter, 47. And they have children.
How nice.
So that worked out.
So I'm interested, and I think people listening would be too. You talk about from heartbreak to healing. Can you talk about yourself and Don and how that works? I mean, that sounds...
Oh,
such
yes.
a difficult.
Well, pretty much of what I was describing,
mm-hmm.
I was heartbroken
yes.
all the time. And
while
Don,
she was living.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, until we found a place for Dana called Hillside House in Santa Barbara,
mm-hmm.
which still exists today, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful. It's a terrific place. One of very few places, because in those days, there were just state institutions, cold, hard places that the kids just sat there in their wheelchairs. But Hillside House is a home, and
mm-hmm.
it's very welcoming to people. I told them they should pay me for advertising because they're so wonderful.
But how old were your other two children
when
Dana died?
This was the coincidence. When we placed Dana, the day we placed Dana, I found out I was pregnant with my son. That was really a shock.
Was that a gift?
Oh,
a shock
it was a gift.
Yeah.
A wonderful gift.
Yes.
Scott was brought us such joy.
But I mean, even when you first found out.
Oh, yes, it was a gift. But I was also sort of torn. I felt guilty. I felt guilty. I thought, oh, my God, this is a gift from God. But I don't want to forget Dana. I want to learn from what Dana taught me. And Dana will always be.
So can you talk
be...
about that to us?
Sure.
I'd like to know what that healing
Well,
process.
This is the part that we had Dana. It was very hard for us mm-hmm. to place her. I felt like a failure as a mother. But over time, we began to really adjust to it, and we were raising our son.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 years later, we had our daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But during this whole time, we would visit Dana, and my son, at 2 years old, he'd introduce himself, and he'd say, hi, my name is Scott, and I have a sister who's handicapped.
Oh.
So there's always humor to everything.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I just felt I didn't want to see or hear the word disability again. Mm-hmm. I thought it was over. It was done. But I had a phone call, actually after she died, from Dr. Jones. And she asked me to come back to UCLA. And this is when my whole life really changed. I didn't know what I was going to be doing with my life. Raising my children was it was so precious. And by the way, I kept thinking that something was going to happen to them.
Of course.
I felt so unsure. I thought that something was going to happen to them. I have a little bit of that still to this day, but you don't get over that, I guess. Maybe all mothers feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Jones invited me to come back and speak to some of the parents, which I did. And these were all new faces, and they were sitting behind a one-way mirror watching the kids work with the professionals as I had sat in the same room. They were, in fact, they were saying the same things that we all said. And we really enjoyed talking, and they wanted to know all about Dana, and they wanted to know about my life. This Dr. Jones was a very clever woman. And they invited me to come back. I felt so good. I felt so like I was healing, finally, that something was healing. And in fact...
By helping others.
Yes, by helping others. So I ended up staying there for 3 years as a volunteer counselor.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Because I'm just wondering, I can see where it would be healing to you, but it must have been very comforting to other parents.
Well,
to talk to somebody or hear from somebody who had actually lost a child and is moving on to see life even after that.
Well, that became my career.
Uh-huh.
As a result of that at UCLA, I went back to school and I ended up, I had a program for children for 15 years, infant-toddler program, and I included the parents in everything with
an infant-toddler program with an eye towards what kind of children?
Kids with disabilities, sorry.
Oh, definitely. Okay,
yeah.
That's important.
And now this was not inclusion. This was strictly kids, early infant program. Mm-hmm. And I worked with families, and part of the program, the parents went with the kids. They weren't separated. They worked with the therapists, and then there was a portion of time we would work together in a discussion group,
mm-hmm.
because I thought that this was the part that was so sorely neglected. And by the way, it still is.
Mm-hmm.
That has not taken off terribly. I was one of the few people in Los Angeles and, by the way, in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
that is a therapist who will be working with families. So I worked for over 38 years with families of children doing parent groups, and it's made a huge difference for them. So in answer to your question, I was, in fact, able to help people and myself as well. And I finally retired because I got a little older.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still
doing
practice.
I wish this were one of those television moments. You don't look old enough to have done anything for 38 years.
Oh,
neither
Thank
here nor
you.
There.
Thank you. But anyway, I'm still doing a parent group. I mean, it's just a volunteer. And we started when we moved to San Diego. So it's been 19 years, and these children started as very young kids, and they're now in college. Some of them are in college. So it's been a very heartwarming life.
Yeah, it must
life.
Be something for you to see and realize.
Yes. Oh, it's...
Well, let me ask you something, because we are about love letters and the power of letters written and sent. Who would get your love letter if you were to write one right now?
Dana, my daughter, would get it.
I was hoping,
Yes,
okay.
Dana would. Should I read it?
I would love you to.
Okay, I have to put my glasses on very quickly.
I mean, there's so many people. There's that Dr. Jones.
Oh, there's a lot of people, but if it wasn't for Dana, none of this would happen.
Of course.
None of this.
Of course.
And I used to wonder, why was she born? Why was she born? So I sort of call it a prayer to Dana.
Okay.
Dana, although physically you're not here, you remain ever present in our hearts. Your memory will stay alive as the main character of this book, and serve as a testimonial to you and all children and people with disabilities who have touched so many people's lives. You have been the ultimate gift to society and to us, your family.
So in the end, this very difficult...
Turned out to be a large gift,
a great gift. Was a huge gift to you and to the world.
Exactly.
Around you.
Exactly.
That is so lovely.
Thank you.
I have a question to ask about that, because we, Teresa and I, talk a lot about they should be mailed to someone, letters.
Oh.
This is wonderful. I see it's in your handwriting,
mm-hmm.
which is worth gold, because handwriting carries a lot. And who could we encourage you to send this to? Because
oh,
I have a thought. Do you, now, your grandchildren are how old?
My grandchildren are the right ages. They know about Dana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my oldest granddaughter is almost 15.
Oh.
And then my grandson's 13 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And my son's stepchildren are 12, 10, and 7.
Okay. So they obviously know, as you say, they know about Dana. They know about what you are to the world and what
you've
done.
Know if they know that.
Oh.
I mean, I don't talk about that to them.
Okay. So here's my thought. Because, you know, letters that are handwritten, love letters, are just not thrown away. People tuck them in a drawer. They put them in a box. They put
uh-huh.
People don't get rid of them. Hmm. And in three generations, when we are all long gone, that will still be here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I always look to the future. You know, this is an important part of your history. Will it be a treasure for somebody to find this in 50 years? Something in your handwriting.
Where should I leave it?
I think, what about mailing it? What about saying, you know, dear Dana, I am writing this to you, but I am going to send it to your, what would they be to her? Your
cousins.
Oh, cousins, yes. But I'm going to send it to your cousins, who are my grandchildren.
And think about that.
Then just say what she was, just like you did,
mm-hmm.
and put it in an envelope, and just mail one to each of them.
That's a very good idea. I hadn't even thought about that.
It'll be part of your history, documented in your own hand forever to come. Mm-hmm. We see letters. And you know, when you do things on video and you do things on tape.
Yes.
As
I have
wants,
that all saved.
Of course you do.
Yes.
And Teresa wants
And I have all of my speeches saved and
right.
all my yeah.
On mm-hmm. And technology's going to change, and just like you can't play your Betamax movies or use your floppies anymore.
Uh-huh.
Those are not going to be useful. In 100
right.
years?
That's right.
This is.
That's a very good
is.
Idea.
I hope you do it.
I think that's a great suggestion.
Okay. We encourage that a lot in our workshops.
They know about the book. I don't think they've read the book yet, because I felt it was a little bit...
Sure.
They're a little bit young, but
okay.
Dana's legacy from heartbreak to healing, they know...
Right.
They know what the title
they have
means.
Have something from you in your handwriting
mm.
that even with all you've done in the formal way...
Uh-huh.
That you were still thinking of them in the personal.
That's a lovely thought.
Can we talk about your book a bit? And you've brought one. You brought a copy to Janet and me, and thank you very much for that. So it's Dana's Legacy from Heartbreak to Healing. And how could people find this book if they want to be inspired by it and learn?
They can go on Amazon. Mm-hmm. They can Barnes and Noble. The book is going on Kindle and iPad in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you have a website?
Yes,
or
I do.
Anything you'd like to offer?
My website really describes a lot, and I have all of my interviews. The website is danaslegacy.com. It's not Dana's with an apostrophe.
Right. So let's danaslegacy.com. And for people here who... are facing the same challenges and want the strength and knowledge that Gail has, you can go to her website.
Right.
And maybe find places up here that are support groups.
Right.
I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Right. And they can call me.
Oh,
they
how
can
nice.
Or email me.
Okay.
So
please keep that in mind.
And I think my email's on my website. Mm-hmm. Shall
okay.
I give it to you?
Yes, sure.
It's Gail, G-A-Y-L-E-S-L-8... at mac.com.
Oh, how clever.
So it's S as in Sam. Yeah. Some people think I say F, but it's S as in Sam.
Okay, good. That's important, because it's kind of unforgiving if you get one wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So what do you see now for ahead of you? In
retiring. Completely.
But you say you're still doing something.
Well,
oh,
what I'm doing is really trying to get the word out with this book.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that this book has to reach parents and families.
That's right. So you're retired from therapy
yes.
practice, but
yes.
you're not retired from the world.
No,
of,
and I'm speaking
okay.
and I'm going everywhere that I
oh,
can.
Oh, good. Okay.
And I did receive an email from someone in Holland and Bali. And this mother is writing a book. She's a mother of a child. She's writing a book, and she wanted to quote my book.
Oh, good.
Which I thought, oh, it's reaching people. Yeah. That's all I care about.
Do you ever dream about her?
I've dreamt about her a lot.
I wondered about that.
I have. Yeah. I've dreamt about her being a whole person, not disabled.
So you see that same little beautiful face, but in a not disabled body. And,
yes. Yeah. And there are pictures in the book, by the way. There's,
I saw that.
Yeah.
So just quickly, I have a question. For our listeners who may be wondering, who may be facing the similar kind of heartache, what would you suggest that they do?
I mean, where do they go? How do they find it? Well, first of all, I think research the internet. Mm-hmm. But I think if they went to their pediatricians, doctors, pediatric neurologists, and ask for other parents' names and phone numbers, the best resource are other parents.
Mm-hmm.
There's always somebody just a little bit ahead of you who can really save you some extra anguish. And I think they are the best resources in the world. And they become close to them. This is always happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if the doctors are kind enough, they'll have to ask permission, of course. But they should be referring parents, new parents especially, who don't know where to go, what to do. And by the way, the book talks about, there's a lot of parent stories.
Oh, good.
And it talks about those early feelings. So that they'll know that they're not alone.
Yes.
They know that this is what you feel, and it's okay, and you can get through it. You can
That's the most important message.
Yes, you can get through it.
It's okay, and you can get through it part.
Not only endure the trauma, but grow because of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful thing to be able to say to people.
There are people who read the book who don't have anything to do with disability, and they've told me it's helped them in their, traumas. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, now, sure, because what's true of one traumatic life challenge would be true of...
Exactly.
Because ultimately, it's not about the challenge, it's about you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So, okay, go ahead.
So, Gail, thank you again for joining us on our program and enlightening us and our listeners. We learn something with every guest. We hope that our listeners will tune in every week at this time and also visit our website, www.loveletterssquad.com, where we have all of our past programs and many lessons from many people. We just have time to sign off, and as we like to say, we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So till next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.